the symbol of the stupa makes its appearance in chapter 11 of the White Lotus Sutra. And it appears after the various parables with which we've already dealt in the course of these lectures. That is to say, it appears after the parable of the burning house, after the parable or myth of the return journey, after the parable of the rain cloud, and after the parable of the sun and the moon. And it also appears after the Buddha has predicted to supreme enlightenment, to perfect Buddhahood, numerous disciples of his. And it also appears after he has described the propagation of the White Lotus Sutra in the distant past and the previous Buddhas, and also after he has described the various ideal qualities of the preacher of the White Lotus Sutra, one who aspires to make known the message of the White Lotus Sutra. And if we look at the text of the White Lotus Sutra, if we examine its chapters, we find that this great symbol, the symbol of the stupa, is introduced roughly halfway through the work. That is to say, not reckoning the various chapters which seem to be later additions. So occurring as it does halfway through the work, appearing as it does halfway through the work, the stupa symbol, divides the whole of the White Lotus Sutra into two approximately equal parts, into two great halves. And the first part, we may say, the part occurring before the appearance of the stupa, is dominated by the great parables which we've already studied. And the second half, after the appearance of the stupa, and perhaps including the appearance of the stupa, is dominated not so much by symbols, though a few of these do sporadically occur, but rather by myth, by symbol, and by what we may describe as cosmic phantasmagoria. We can also generalize a bit more, a bit further, and we can say that the first half of the White Lotus Sutra, the half dominated by the parables, is more concerned with the way to enlightenment, the way to Buddhahood, especially in its form of the Mahayana, the great way. The second half, on the contrary, seems to be more concerned with the goal. Similarly, the first half is more concerned with the bodhisattva, with the bodhisattva's career, with the bodhisattva's progress along the path, along the great way. Whereas the second half, dominated by the myths and the symbols, seems to be more, we may say, dedicated to the Buddha, or to the concept of the Buddha field, the universe, the spiritual universe, the spiritual world in which the Buddha, as it were, spiritually reigns, which he guides, which he influences. And we may go further than this and become more general and more, as it were, abstract still and say that in the first half of the sutra we see things. We see the whole of existence, as it were, subspecie durationis, we may say, under the form of time, temporally. Whereas in the second half we see them subspecie eternitatis, under the form of eternity, as they always were, are and will be, above and beyond time, in the dimension of eternity. The first half of the sutra, therefore, depicts, we may say, perfection, spiritual perfection, everlastingly in process of attainment, whereas the second half depicts perfection eternally attained. And the symbol of the stupa, this great symbol of Buddhism, stands, as it were, in between. And it stands in between not to separate them, but to unite them, because the symbol of the stupa, as it were, contains, as we shall see, both time and eternity. But before we see that, we have to inquire What is the stupa? On lower levels, in simpler terms, what does the stupa represent? It's high time that we considered this question. And we're going to consider it under four great heads. First of all, we're going to consider the origins of the stupa in India. Secondly, we're going to consider what has been called the five-element symbolism. And after that, we're going to apply it and consider the five-element symbolism in the stupa. And finally, we're going to consider the yin-yang symbolism in the stupa.